This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Newspaper editors and TV producers may have cause to reflect on how to perform in the face of modern-day terrorism, but their concerns are dwarfed by those of tech giants like Google, Facebook, and Twitter, who have seen their services continually co-opted by terrorism recruiters and extremists of every stripe. But as they remind us after each new attack, they are doing their best. It's just that with so many users, so many videos, there's only so much that can be done. To which computer science professor Hani Farid says,
not so much.
Farid is a professor at Dartmouth College, senior advisor to the Counter-Extremism Project, and co-creator of a new technology that he says could significantly rein in extremist content online, if the tech companies were really interested in doing so. Hani, welcome to OTM.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
All right, deja vu, because I feel like I've heard those objections before from the tech giants on the matter of child pornography. Too many obstacles to finding the porn needles in the internet haystack.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So back in 2003, there was growing pressure from the White House on tech giants to do something about the growing and troubling distribution of child pornography. And between 2003 and 2008, they did a lot of hand-wringing, talking about how serious they take this, about how horrific the crime was. But they essentially threw up their hands for 5 years and said, look, the internet's really big and there's nothing we can do about it. And in 2008, I started collaborating with Microsoft and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And in about a year, we had developed a technology that is now in worldwide deployment called PhotoDNA. And it allows tech companies like Google, like Facebook, like Twitter to find and remove child pornography. And in fact, it was a hard problem, but it wasn't nearly as hard as the tech companies were saying. And the problem was they weren't working on it.
You came up with the solution that you called PhotoDNA, trying to establish, I guess, inherent patterns in child pornography and then looking for them elsewhere?
Yeah, so just like the human DNA is distinct and stable over your lifetime, digital content has a similar type of digital signature, which we've been able to extract. And so what we do is we reach into an image and we extract a distinct digital signature that is stable as that image makes its way around the internet. And then what we do is we go over to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and we look at tens of millions of known child pornography, and we say, extract the signature from all of the content that you want to remove. And then we sit at the pipe of a Facebook, a Twitter, a Google, a Microsoft, a Dropbox, whatever it is, and we scan every single image that comes in and compare it against the database. If it's a match, it's child pornography, and it goes away.
When you started to tackle the terrorism recruitment problem and other violent content, you began with something very much like PhotoDNA. How does it work?
So the new technology that we developed with the Counter-Extremism Project is called eGLIF. The core concept, extract a unique digital signature and compare that signature on upload, is the same as it is with PhotoDNA, but it's also able to analyze audio and video recordings, which PhotoDNA cannot do. We can now do it with all different forms of media.
Increasingly, we are seeing live video on these platforms. Is there anything that can be done to intervene in live violence before it makes its way all across the net?
That kind of complex and nuanced understanding of content is incredibly difficult for computers, and we are not there yet. But I believe that we could develop an early warning system. So it would not be perfect, but you can imagine a system that is analyzing live video as it comes in and will flag content that may be inappropriate for a human to look at and make a decision on. I genuinely believe that we could do something, but it's going to require a real effort on everybody's part, and nobody seems to be doing that right now at any real level.
Look, I'm no computer scientist, but I do know something about the network effect. When a live act of violence begins on the internet, there is an immediate reaction throughout Twitter and throughout Facebook and everywhere else. There must be some way to convert those reactions to an instant flagging mechanism that can jump in and pull the thing down, no?
No, you're absolutely right. But here's another troubling thing about companies like Facebook is that they make it exceedingly easy for you to share and like something, and they make it much less easy for you to report inappropriate content. There is no button right next to the like button that says report. And that's intentional, right? They don't want those reports. They want you to share. They want you to like. That's how the systems work.
On the subject of Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, he has just recently announced that they're going to hire 3,000 live human beings to help discriminate between news and fake news. So I'm going to assume that when you showed up with eGlyph, he said, this is just what we're looking for. Count us in. When do we start?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. So we said, here's a technology we would like to give for you for free. We know what we're doing. We have tested it, and we want to create an industry standard, and we were rebuffed. I say we were rebuffed. I have to say it's really frustrating because every time we see horrific things on Facebook or on YouTube or on Twitter, we get the standard press release from the company saying, we take online safety very seriously. There is no room on our networks for this type of material. And yet the companies continue to drag their feet. They continue to ignore technology that could be used and doesn't affect their business model in any significant way. In their own self-interest, they should be doing this, and I'm baffled by why they do not.
Aha. Uh-huh. So let's assume that there's nobody at Facebook who is a champion of global terrorism or of child pornography. And let's further assume that taking these algorithmic measures to filter out this stuff is not going to cut significantly into their revenues. Why do you suppose they haven't jumped right in?
No matter how many times I have asked, no matter how many times the ministers at the EU have asked, no matter how many times the folks at the United Nations and the White House have asked, I have never gotten a very good answer. Here's what I think I can tell you, though, is when we were deploying PhotoDNA, here was what we really heard, was that once you get into the business of systematic content removal, you are going to be the end of the internet as we know it. Somehow, if you take down child pornography, if you take down extremist content, they're going to come for the kittens. That's what's next.
That every incremental step along the way of creating controls erodes the essence of the internet. But they already have terms of service that prohibit this stuff.
Right. So there's the problem with that argument. First of all, let me be very clear. I believe in an open and free internet. I believe in vigorous debate. But there are limits. They're not even my limits. They're the company's limits. So if the company fundamentally believes that there should be no limits on speech, whether it's legal or not, then they should eliminate their terms of service that say so. But they can't have it both ways. So Google and Facebook and Twitter want to have terms of service that give them public relations cover and legal cover. They don't want to actually enforce them. So what we are saying is you have said, as a private company, there are limits to speech on our networks. We are simply giving you a mechanism to enforce that.
So you're essentially calling their bluff. If the bluff is the terms of service, you're saying, put your algorithm where your mouth is.
Yes. And so here we are now in 2017, and we hear the same tired excuses. The internet is really big, and it's really complicated, and yet they seem to have no trouble harnessing the power of that data to advertise to you, to sell your personal data. There is no financial incentive for them to do this. But I think that's going to start to change. We are starting to see lawsuits starting to sue the social media companies for material support of terrorism. The Brits, just this week, again, are getting fed up with the social media companies telling them how seriously they take safety and security. And yet we know the internet is being used to radicalize and glorify this kind of violence. We're going to come to a head, and it is coming very soon. And if the companies don't get their act together and voluntarily start to really crack down on this, it is going to start getting legislated. And that is going to be ugly because I'm not sure that's the right solution.
Hani, thank you.
It's very good to talk to you, Bob.
Hani Farid is a professor of computer science at Dartmouth College, senior advisor for the Counter-Extremism Project, and creator of eGlyph. Coming up, 4 Confederate monuments come down, but monumental questions remain.
This is On the Media.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.